The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Broadcaster and journalist Brianna Parkins and Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director of Sanderson Recruitment Ireland, are with us to look at the week trending. But we've added in a story based on a piece that Brianna wrote for the Irish Times this morning, which really caught our attention. Brianna, it was only about, I think, a month ago in this programme that we did have a debate in relation to the Merchants Quay Centre and the rejection of its plans to have Ireland's first supervised intravenous drug injecting centre. And you wrote about that in a really striking way this morning in the Irish Times from a personal point of view. For those people who haven't seen the piece yet, and I'd urge them to read it, tell us a little bit about your personal interest in this.
So I wrote about my personal history with heroin. I'm not a heroin user. Calm down, mum, if you're hearing this. But I grew up in a very working class neighbourhood, and it was quite common. You know, I have family members who have used heroin. I have a family member who sadly overdosed and died from heroin use. It's something that it's been in my life for a long time. And I wrote about my personal sort of journey with it. So I had a ex-boyfriend when I was very young, maybe 10 years ago now, and I found out that he was secretly using heroin, and I had no idea because I was very innocent back then.
Yeah, how did you miss it?
You know what? I wasn't even drinking. I don't think I'd ever been drunk. So heroin would have gone way over my head completely. I had no idea.
And was there anything in his behaviour which would have you off in retrospect?
So he went from it was like sort of like really good puppy love. It was like the first love of your life. You know, it's very exciting.
You were just a teenager.
And then he just disappeared kind of at weird hours and made strange friends. And then the silences. And so that's kind of, maybe that would have been a tipping point. And then something horrible happened at a house party. It was quite violent. And then he kind of had to come clean that he was using heroin, which is a difficult thing to hear when you're 19 years old and you're not sure how to process that.
How did he get into heroin?
I think a friend, to be honest. I think it was one of his friends. It was one of those things.
And then why? What was it? I mean, this is the thing, I suppose, the question for a lot of people is, you know, what is it that actually persuades people that it is worthwhile to indulge in drugs, which education tells you are exceptionally dangerous to you?
You know what? I can't speak on his behalf. But other people in my life, generally, they've come from complex family backgrounds. They're not kids who've had everything handed to them. Drug addiction affects middle class and wealthier families as well, but it does predominantly affect working class communities and working class families and kids from, you know, there might not be a mum or a dad around, there might be substance abuse in their own parents. They generally aren't handed the best card in life to start off with. And it's very, very easy to slide into drugs when you feel like the world's given up on you. People are always telling you, don't apply for university, you won't get in, school's not for you, teachers are giving you a hard time. It's very easy just to turn to drugs.
The relevance of this to the Merchants Quay Injecting Centre has been, I think, in some respects, and you refer to this in your Irish Times piece, the lack of sympathy that many people actually have towards those who are addicts and the need to provide facilities for them to help them as a stepping stone to actually getting treatment and cure.
Well, that was the argument behind the Sydney Centre, which opened in 2001. It's the argument that we need to keep people alive for them in order to reach the rehab stage. Most people I know, and studies prove this, that it takes a couple of goes through rehab to get clean. It takes two or three goes, like minimum. So you need to keep people alive. And what these injecting facilities do is they also teach people how to... They don't inject them for them, obviously, but they teach them how to safely inject. They are also a contact point for a lot of people to start getting help. What's been seen in Sydney is they've demonstrated to be not of harm. Now, the issue is there's not a lot of evidence suggesting that they help either. What they have been successful in doing is cleaning up the area around, which was King's Cross. But the referrals into people getting rehab haven't been conclusive around the Sydney example. But they are showing that they aren't doing any harm. They've had 6,000 overdoses. No one's died.
And as I think you also expressed this morning, which is a very valid and relevant point, is that even if you do provide these particular facilities, you also need simultaneously to be providing the rehab facilities to allow people to break their addiction.
I mean, in both countries, in both Australia and Ireland, it's a disgrace, the number of rehab beds available. They're just not there for people to get in. And it takes a lot for an addict to finally go, actually, I do need help. And when they make that decision, you need to get them into rehab as quickly as possible. There's no good telling people, oh, it was a 3-month wait. They'll change their mind. They won't come back. These are people who need to go in today, if not yesterday.
Donal, I don't know whether you got a chance to read this piece as yet, but it is interesting, the point that was also brought up by Brianna in relation to this, that there's sort of, if it doesn't affect people personally, they tend to be unsympathetic towards those who are dealing with addiction issues and don't seem to be interested in the idea of providing what might be controversial facilities to help.
I think it polarises people. So, you know, when a facility like this is talked about, you tend to have a lot of objections from local residents or maybe businesses that think that it's going to perhaps damage property prices or bring the area down. And
and what's more important, people's health or property prices?
Yeah, it's a matter of life and death. And I think that's where people sometimes disassociate their empathy from the ability to see another person. It's very, you know, connected to the homeless situation in Dublin, where people get conditioned to walking past and not seeing the person there.
I read the objections and, you know, people do have valid objections, like, does this actually work? And the evidence is in some parts inconclusive. Again, it does help people, doesn't cause harm, but doesn't exactly help either. That's okay. It's okay to have the debate around how effective these facilities are. But the majority of them were just NIMBYism. And the worst part was it was from pubs. So pubs were banging on about having a service that promotes addictive behaviours. You're a pub.
Mm. The great Irish addiction is alcohol.
I'm willing to bet my meagre savings that alcohol addiction costs taxpayers in this country way more than drug addiction in terms of lost productivity, in terms of healthcare services, mm-hmm. in the social costs, Tulsa, all that stuff.
How long are you living here in Dublin now?
9 months.
Okay, so how similar or different is it to Sydney when it comes to social issues like alcohol addiction, drug addiction?
Well, I feel like Sydney is sort of almost 10 years ahead in terms of drug addiction, because where heroin has almost disappeared in Sydney, and they've moved on to a really nasty drug called methamphetamine, and I hope it to God it never makes its way to Australia because it devastates families. I grew up in a place close to a place called Cabramatta, and that was ground zero for heroin in the 90s in Australia. So it was really common to see people smacking out on the streets, overdosing, ambulances being called. And I hadn't seen anyone inject for about 10 years until I moved to Dublin. I was like, oh, great, this is how it is. This is like going back in time. But in terms of alcohol, I think there is a more positive drinking culture here. In Australia, mainly men drink and get really, really violent. Here, people drink and they go home singing. So I think there's a better culture around it. People are more personally responsible. There's less aggression.
What do you think of that, Donald?
Yeah, I haven't spent much time in Australia, but I
do you think our pub culture is friendly? I mean, there is, and I'm not going into any discussion. We did see a video overnight yesterday of a well-known Irish sports star who wasn't particularly friendly inside in a pub to a man who wouldn't take a glass of whiskey from him.
I saw that as well, but I think by and large we are. I think the video that I saw recently that kind of summed it up was the guard walking through Temple Bar, where he sees the chap dressed in the brightly coloured clothes and kind of stops and has a bit of a joke with him. I don't know if you saw that particular one.
I haven't seen that particular one, no.
I'll we'll retweet it or something later on.
But the bouncers are so sound. So in Australia, bouncers are quite violent and will drag you up by the scruff of your neck and throw you out if you've been stumbling. Here they're just like, does your friend want a glass of water, or like finish your pint and then maybe leave and get some food?
That's a good bouncer, and that's where the best bouncers are trained to make sure
to de-escalate.
Diffuse situations, de-escalate situations. Okay, let's move away from this topic onto other things. Something I want to ask you about, Donal, a story about Weight Watchers getting criticised for a new app which is aimed at children as young as 8 years of age. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so the app is called Curbo, and Weight Watchers, which have rebranded, they're now just going by WW, have launched this app. It's aimed at kids from 8 to 17 years of age, and it's all about, I suppose, trying to encourage them to be healthy around their exercise choices and how they eat. But I think it's come under a lot of criticism because it's really, you know, perpetuating a kind of a self-loathing or getting kids at that age.
But is it not actually trying to encourage children from an early age to get into the good eating habits that they'll carry with them for life?
Yeah, but I think that's the responsibility of parents, to make sure that our kids are active and that they eat healthily. I think putting that focus on somebody who's not, developed and potentially creating a situation where they're starting to, you know, view themselves or self-loathe, I think is really unhealthy. So It may have come from good intentions. There's also a cost associated with the app, which is about $60-something per month, which is
really?
Which is, yeah. So they weren't doing it for the for the greater good. It was a commercial gig, so it's received a fair bit of flack.
Brianna, what do you make of this?
I think this should be, childhood obesity should be the space of public health. I don't think it should be privatised out to Weight Watchers for $69 a month. If you look at childhood obesity, it tends to run in, again, more poorer working class families who might not have the nutritional information or access to good food, because healthy food's expensive. We've seen the prices in an organic food store.
Is it more expensive in Ireland than it would be in Australia?
Depends what now. Avocados are cheaper here than in Australia, which even though
but
we grow them...
But they come from New Zealand, don't they?
Even though we grow them, I know, avocados could basically be pegged to the gold standard in Australia. Like, you are middle class if you have multiple avocados in your fridge at home. But really, I think this is excluding a whole bunch of people who would need this at $69 a month. But I don't think Weight Watchers has any place in this space. I think it should be controlled by public health departments and schools and guidance counsellors, not people willing to make a quick buck off these children. It's kind of cruel.
It's kind of capitalising. They're saying that 20% of kids between the age of 2 and 19 in the States are obese at the moment. So it's an epidemic, but I don't think it should be commercialised in that way.
And Brianna, you were the one who brought up avocados in the first part of this discussion. So I'm going back there again, because apparently it's not the avocados on toast which is stopping Generation Rent from being able to afford to buy houses. It's the amount of money that they actually have to spend on attending friends' weddings.
So, Matt, I found out something truly horrifying since I've been in Ireland. It's that bars aren't open at Irish weddings. It's horrifying. If there was, like, at all weddings in Australia, it's all completely free booze, because there'd be a riot on your hands. You'd have drunk uncles, you know, getting into fight with bouncers at a wedding venue. It just wouldn't happen. So not only do you have to pay for your own drink, you've got to give them the money. And then if you're a girl, you're looking at least forking out $150 once you spent money on your tan, your hair and makeup. That's not even including the new outfit and the new matching hat that has to go with it. No wonder people are going broke.
Okay, I'm aware, actually, a friend of mine who I think has either been to or has to be at 17 weddings this year, Donald.
Yeah, it's really a prevalent thing. The millennials are apparently going into debt over this, because you're dead right. By the time you take finding the perfect outfit, the gift, drinks,
accommodation,
hotel accommodation potentially. So this article said that 1 in 3 millennials will fall into debt to the extent that they won't be able to pay their bills. 1 in 10 said that they've been forced to sell possessions to be able to meet the costs of attending weddings. And they were talking about spending to attend a wedding somewhere between £400 to £1,000, which, if I know you were mentioning, Matt, one of the team here has got a number of weddings to attend. That's, we're getting into thousands and thousands. So we're seeing Generation Rent become Generation Broke.
This colleague of mine has one next Friday, followed by one the day after. But I can't get over the idea, Brianna, that you think that people would throw a free bar. Can you imagine how wealthy you'd have to be in Ireland to throw a free bar,
Matt,
at a wedding?
We're talking about Australians. We're on parity here. No, Australians love making fools of ourselves at weddings. That's why we go.
Yeah, but it's the cost of it. I don't think of it. I'm just thinking about it. I have maybe years ahead of me when it's going to happen, when if any or all of my children decide they had to get married. If I had to run a full bar for the cost of everybody.
It's included in the price per head. So, wedding venues in Australia, it's much cheaper to get married in Australia. I'm becoming like a wedding industry evangelist here for Australian weddings. It's about $110 per plate, and that includes unlimited beer and wine.
And that's Aussie dollars.
That's Aussie dollars. So what's that? 90, 80 euro per person.
All food and drink for that?
Yes.
I'm on my way. That's
all the drink as well. Because you wouldn't believe the corkage charges on bottles of wine for a wedding meal. That's extraordinary. And but what do you do when it comes to presents? Because this is the other big issue.
Okay.
What size value do you put on a present if you've been supplied with the meal and the wine, if not the bar drink?
Depends how fancy the wedding is. Mm. So generally I would put in an envelope how much I thought my plate would cost. And it can be sneaky and look these packages up online to make sure that no one's getting shortchanged. But generally I would go maybe $100 Australian dollars, so like €70, For myself and for my partner, I'd put in maybe 150 euro.
Yeah, we're seeing less and less that people want gifts. It's more so cash now, because I think because people no longer wait until after they're married to live together, they've already got the toasters and the, you know, the fancy cutlery and all that kind of stuff. They want the cash to offset against the significant cost. The other thing that this article said was the people that turned down wedding invitations because of financial concerns, almost half of them, it cost them the friendship with the couple.
That's interesting, because the listener does say, I have a clever idea. Don't go to every wedding you're asked to, only family and close friends. We've been asked to weddings where we declined. Mm. But there is a potential downside in that, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a risk with that, yeah.
Do you know, I hate the afters invitation. Yeah. I think that's really cheeky. I think that's a really, like, you're not close enough for me to pay for your dinner, but I still want you kind of there maybe to give a present.
And to make up the numbers.
No! Get out of it.
Okay, what about this story, Donald, I'll go to you in this one, about how apparently a study has shown that multiple marriages are good for women but bad for men.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, all right. So, so essentially, as is happening more and more, people are marrying and more than once, and it apparently has a better effect for women than for men. So it apparently is better for women's health, helps them financially, and gives their children a better chance of survival. So I'm just interested to see this. Now, the particular piece of research was done in a Tanzanian village and then was analysed by a team at University of California. So apparently, yeah, it wears on men's virility and their ability to remain solvent. So it's an interesting piece of...
Brianna, what do you make of this? I mean, Tanzanian village, yeah. I wonder how universal the rules applying to this could be.
Considering that the main key indicator of happiness was survival of children, I don't know how well that would translate into a developed nation. Like, I don't think you're going to get the same outcomes in, say, Lucan. But there has been additional studies suggesting that single childless women are happier.
Yes.
And married women are the least happy, with married men sort of coming in the middle. So it kind of doesn't suit women to be married.
Yeah. What happened to men in this particular study, and the study was 2,000 people, their fitness was found to drop. So they developed the dad bod. They basically...
That's their excuse, is it?
Yeah. And they produced fewer surviving children. So... But the women went on to greater happiness and greater things. So good for them.
Maybe in Tanzania.
Okay, but then what about the rise of the micro-marriages that's been the thing? This is on the back of Miley Cyrus' marriage to Liam Hemsworth lasting, what was it, all of about?
8 months.
8 months, what was that? I thought it was longer than that.
Yeah, so
Love is dead.
Exactly, yeah. A rep for them came out and said that they had split to focus on themselves and their careers. And then pretty soon after that, Miley was pictured in the arms of reality TV star Caitlin Carter, who's recently split from Brody Jenner. I know, because I've been watching the remake of The Hills. There's more and more of them happening. You know, we had Russell Brand and Katy Perry. Their marriage lasted 14 months. You had Renee Zellweger and the country singer Kenny Chesney. Their marriage lasted for 128 days before they annulled it. So you just wonder.
Kardashian, I didn't realise Kim Kardashian had been married before.
She's a basketball player.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Everyone else did too.
But you just wonder, is it that they live in a world that's free from the financial and societal norms? It's just a playground where they can do what they want.
Hasn't it always been the way Hollywood stars and celebrities have always gone for the brief marriages?
Elizabeth Taylor, how many
did she talk up? Yeah.
She got a very good jewelry collection out of that. So maybe that's the way to go. Maybe out of the Tanzanian village.
So maybe that means that maybe they knew exactly the sort of thing that is better for them.
She
multiple
was onto
marriages,
it.
Take the settlement every time on the way out.
I think
you sound approving of that, Brianna.
Well, I think a lot of these are relatively equal contributors to a lot of these marriages. You know, when I look at this article, you know, they're all kind of relatively famous and well to do.
Okay, to finish off, we have a Steve Coogan story, but I cannot believe, Brianna, you have no idea of who Alan Partridge is.
No, I don't. He wasn't.
Has he not made it to Australia?
We do have colour telly now. That's been a big development. We're about to get internet soon, but no, I don't know whether it's because he's just maybe a bit out of my generation or what. But I don't know. I didn't ever come across Alan Partridge, no.
You should catch up with Alan Partridge, particularly this year's thing. And there's also the Irish character, his doppelganger from Sligo.
Oh, that's
which
brilliant.
Is one of the best bits of television of this year so far.
Get out your black and tans on
exactly,
the BBC, which is
exactly.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah, so he
very quickly, the story about him, though.
Yeah, he got off a six-month driving ban.
Steve Coogan, not Alan Partridge.
Yes, of course.
But there is an Alan Partridge link.
So Steve Coogan basically argued in court that it would cause hardship to the team of people that work for him on the Alan Partridge series if he were to get this six-month driving ban. So he was caught doing 36 in a 30, which doesn't sound very bad.
Yeah, but he
in
had
fairness.
9 penalty points prior to that.
Yeah, he was caught the previous year doing double the speed limit. So, look, they gave him a bit of leniency. He still got a ban for a couple of months and £750 fine, but Alan Partridge helped him out.
Yes. Listener says, haven't Kim Kardashian and Kanye West been married for years? They have, but this is going back. Kim
this
was married to this guy, was it? Chris Humphries. Years ago. Okay, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Brianna Perkins, Donal O'Donoghue for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.